Much indeed for reading for us. Good morning, everybody. Good to see you this morning. Phil's already prayed for us. Let's crack straight on. If you've got Acts 17, please keep it open. We'll be looking at that this morning. First of all, a quote, Ruth, if you could pop that on the screen for us, from a man called David Powlison. Idolatry is by far the most frequently discussed problem in the scriptures. I wonder if you're surprised by that. I certainly was when I read that. And David anticipates a common response. So what? Even if that is the most common problem in the scriptures, how's it relevant today? I mean, okay, so Athens was a city full of idols back in the first century, but there aren't any in Tunbridge Wells today, are there? Well, perhaps apart from the odd Buddha you see sitting in a window somewhere as you walk around. Surely we've moved beyond idols, haven't we? We just don't have them today, do we? Well, David Powlison goes on and says that the most basic question which God continually poses to every human heart is, has something or someone besides Jesus the Christ taken title to your heart's trust, preoccupation, loyalty, service, fear, and delight? In other words, who or what rules your life, your behavior? Is it Jesus Christ or a substitute for him? And any substitute for Jesus Christ is an idol. Thanks, Ruth. Let's put it another way. What gets you up in the morning? What gets you up in the morning? Mum gets Becky up, I see from the gesticulation between them there. Mum gets Becky up. What motivates you to get up in the morning? Why do you bother? What excites you about the day? What do you worry about the day? What do you need to have the perfect day? Or more simply, what do you feel like doing today? And if you're not very good at getting up in the morning, well, what keeps you in bed? What persuades you that you'll be happier in bed than up and about? These are the kinds of questions that begin to uncover our reasons for living, the things we really want, the things that have taken title to our heart's trust, preoccupation, loyalty, service, fear, and delight. These are the things that dominate our lives, that control us, because we think that they will bring us happiness and contentment and satisfaction, and without them, well, we'll just be miserable. These are the motivations of our lives. These are our idols. And they are many. We all have them. We may not have shrines or statues of Apollos, but we have idols secretly hidden in our hearts and minds. And sometimes they appear, don't they? Sometimes they appear in our behavior. Idols can appear in our possessions, in our internet browsing history. They can appear audibly in our words. Now, when the Apostle Paul arrived in Athens, he looked around and he saw idols everywhere. These stone idols were means to an end. The people believed that the gods, the idols, could give them what they wanted and satisfy their cravings. So, for example, imagine a young man called Alexander. He's going to go on a date with Priscilla. And he might go to the temple, he'd pray and make an offering to the gods of Eros and Hymenaeus, hoping to please them, these gods of love and sex, and get what he wanted from Priscilla. Or starting up her own business, perhaps. Tryphena might have made sacrifices to Plutus, the god of wealth, to persuade him to make her business successful, because that's what she really once. There were countless, countless gods in those days. Gods of music and archery, fertility, wealth and horses, war and even comedy. And you didn't want any of them to be angry with you, because then you wouldn't get what you wanted. So you did whatever was necessary to get from them what you wanted. So it was then that while Paul was waiting for Silas and Timothy in Athens, he was greatly distressed. He was, perhaps the word even means angry, to see that the city was full of idols. Why? Why so distressed and angry? Well, because here is a whole city that has been captivated by something other than Jesus Christ. Yet, literally captivated. They're held captive by these idols. Their whole lives revolve around and are controlled by them. And if you think you're not like that, let me ask you again. What gets you up in the morning? What motivates you through the day to do what you do? To think what you think? To say what you say? Is it the Lord Jesus that is motivating you? Or is it something else, something that you want? Well, what does Paul do about this situation? Well, he goes into the marketplace and he just chats to the people around there. Ordinary people who had a whole range of beliefs. There are some of them, the Epicureans, who probably didn't really believe in the gods, just wanted to live a peaceful, relaxed, kind of pleasurable life. Others, though, thought that their lives were deeply entwined with the gods. In other words, the city was very much like Tunbridge Wells today. Speak to a dozen people about God and the meaning of life, and you'll get a dozen different answers. But as Paul talked about Jesus, they didn't understand what he was going on about. What is this babbler trying to say? They said. He seems to be advocating foreign gods. Perhaps you've had a similar situation as you've tried to share the faith. You did your best, but they just didn't get it. They just didn't understand. Or you might have felt that way when someone first spoke to you about the gospel, about Jesus. Perhaps when you first heard about it, you thought, what on earth are they on about? Some of you might even be sitting there thinking the same about me now. What on earth is this babbler on about? But some in the crowd were intrigued. May we know what this new teaching is that you're presenting? You're bringing some strange ideas to our ears. We want to know what they mean. That's a great response, isn't it? That's the kind of response we love to have. One that we can expect more of today, perhaps. Because Christianity will sound very strange to most people these days. It is just completely at odds with the beliefs of society around us. So Paul was led off to the Areopagus, the city council, and he stood before them and explained his new teaching. Some things back then were very different, weren't they? You cannot imagine today, can you, a new preacher or vicar in Tunbridge Wells being taken off down to the city council and asked to explain what it is he's preaching. But you can live in hope. Anyway, Paul's there in front of the city council and he says, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' Now what you worship as something unknown, I am going to proclaim to you." You see, the Athenians, they had FOMO, the fear of missing out. They were worried that perhaps they'd missed a god, so they had this statue to an unknown god. But Paul says, "Look, I'm not going to show you another god, a different god. I'm going to show you the God." The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. He does not live in temples built by hands, and he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because he himself gives life and breath and everything else. You see, the problem with idols is that they need constant servicing. Whether it's Eros or Apollos, or a desperate search for love and security, or the need to be thanked and recognized for what you've done, or the latest technology, idols are never satisfied. They always want more. But the one true God is not served by human hands. God doesn't need us. He would be entirely content and completely happy without humans. He is entirely and eternally self-sufficient, self-sustaining, and perfectly joyful. In fact, not only does God not need us, he gives us everything we need. God is the living God, not the demanding God we often assume him to be. He is the giving God. And because God gives so much and so generously, we are utterly and completely dependent upon him. Let's pause for a second there. God gives you and me life and breath and everything else. I was born on the 5th of November 1962 in the front bedroom of 57 Rosedale Road, Stoneleigh, Epsom, Surrey, because God decided that that was the exact place where I should be born and live the first 19 or so years of my life. Sometimes I wonder, as I'm sure you do, what it would have been like to have been born in a different place at a different time. In Syria or Eritrea, for example. In the 16th century as one of Henry VIII's courtiers. But no, God decided, and here I am, and there you are. And there you are this morning, on Zoom or here in church, because God chose to have you here now. And he did that in his great kindness. Not so that you could listen to me, but so that you could hear about Jesus. So that you would perhaps seek him and reach out for him and find him, verse 27. After all, he is not far from each of us. Now we know that God is near. He is omnipresent. He is everywhere. You cannot escape from the God who made the world and everything in it, including you. But do you seek him? Do you reach out to him? Have you found him? Or are you so busy seeking other things that you're not busy, not concerned for God? Are you so busy reaching out for other things, trying to grasp the things that you desire so much, that you don't reach out and seek God? Do you imagine that those things you desire so much will be the source of your life, your pleasure, your hope, your everything, that actually God gets pushed to the side? That's idolatry. And there's no excuse for this, because God is not far away. He is not far away, as we often claim. In fact, Paul says, we are his offspring. Now some people take that to say, oh yes, humanity, we are God's offspring. We're so important that God made us his offspring. Now, that's exactly the opposite to the point Paul's making here. Paul doesn't say this to make us think more highly of ourselves. Ooh, aren't we so special? No. Verse 29, he says, therefore, since we are God's offspring, We should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made in man's design. Do you see the point? It's not that we create God, but that he made us, and we are therefore utterly dependent upon him. But the problem is that we do create gods and idols. We replace him. We worship created things. In the past, verse 30, God overlooked such ignorance. But now he commands all people everywhere to repent, to stop searching after those things and seek and search and reach out for Jesus Christ. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. And he has given proof of this by raising him from the dead. So let's go back to that question. Why was Paul so upset, so angry about the idols that he saw everywhere? Well, because when people serve idols, and remember we all have our idols, when people serve idols, they will be judged for their ignorance. Everything we have, everything we are, comes from God, life and breath and everything else. So to turn away and serve our idols is not only madness, but it's morally blameworthy as well. And God has set a day when he will judge. Now, of course, we try and deny the reality of that, don't we? We don't like the idea of judgment, and after all, that will happen to other people, not to us. But the resurrection of Jesus proves that God will judge the world, and that includes you and me. And remember, when Paul spoke, there were still hundreds of people alive who had met Jesus after his resurrection. But some of the people there sneered at Paul. And they still sneer today, don't they? Others were concerned about the possibility. We want to hear you again on this subject. And a few became followers and believed. Dionysius, a member of the Areopagus Council, a woman named Damaris, and a number of others. The usual response to any talk of God's judgment is sneering. You may have experienced that already. Some, however, will ask questions about it. And we can talk about God's justice and his love, because the two are inextricably linked, because it is in love that God judges evil. And a few people will believe. And you, this morning, as you sit at home or here in church, are you living in humble gratitude for all that God has given you? Are you conscious day by day, moment by moment, that your life, your breath, and everything else is a gift from God? Or are you chasing after the idols of your heart, your desires, your lusts, your preferences, your hopes, your fears? And so, therefore, how will you stand when Jesus Christ returns to judge the world?